What did your job in the ship entail?
Was work in the boiler room, in B boiler room.
Can you take me through what you would typically have to do during a watch in your job?
Well, there were six boilers in the boiler room, and there was a first class soaker on one boiler either end of the boiler room, and a second class stoker on the intermediate boilers. We have one boiler to look after there, and then the auxiliary machinery, the pumps and oil fuel pumps and the fresh water pumps and so on, were in the centre of the boiler room. But whilst I was there, I used to clean the front of the boiler the way we used to clean our engines on the railway in those days. It used to be everything polished up, and of course the other stokers in the boiler room said, "What are you doing that for?" Because when the engineer came down, he'd look at my boiler and say, "This is all right. Why aren't the others like it?" I said, "Well, I'll move round if you like and do all the others as well." But it didn't work out that way. The next thing is that I got promoted up to the fan flat, which is above the engine room, the boiler room rather, and used to clean and look after all the fans and what have you up there, the main and auxiliary fans, which brought the air from outside down to the boiler room to give forced draft for the sprayers to go into the boilers. Of course, another thing was one of the jobs that we had to do were the boiler cleans. So you should dress up in all the old second-hand women's clothes that used to be in the rag bag, and put that on so as to keep yourself a little bit clean.
Why women's clothes?
Well, it was silk mostly, you see, to save any bits of fluff they're getting inside the boilers. And then the boiler maker would come and he'd have a tray with, and from the top drum of the boiler, they'd drop a marble down through the tubes to make sure they were clean, and he'd catch them at the bottom and then, of course, count them out as they came down to see that there's a requisite number of tubes are clear.
So, when your shipmates saw all this shining brass that you'd created, did they want you to put a stop to it?
I got a bad name for doing that, you see. But I mean, when you're stood on watch for 4 hours, and if you're not the main boiler room, which is keeping the pressure, steam pressure up, I mean, you'd only put one or two sprayers on now and again, and I couldn't stand there for 4 hours on watch doing nothing. I wanted to keep myself busy, and it helped to pass the time as well.
And that was the type of thing you did with Southwestern Railway?
Well, all the railway engines were exceedingly clean in those days. They weren't like the end of the war there, they were all dilapidated and falling to bits sort of thing. But now they used to gleam, and I mean, if you had a Royal Train or something like that, you had to really be on the ball. And you always had a standby engine in the depot ready to go out in the event of a failure of the Royal Train itself. And that was kept clean as well. And another thing was that the foreman, the running foreman as we used to call him, his badge of office was a bowler hat, and also the depot master, and usually station masters, any officials that wore bowler hats. But when I was made foreman myself at Portsmouth, to hell with a bowler hat, I didn't want to wear that. So I never did wear a bowler hat. Excuse me.
Was that before or after the war?
That was during the war and before as well. But the bowler hat was your badge of office. You were an official of some sort.
So coming back to Barham, did you pronounce it Barham or Barham?
Barham, yeah, the Beery Barham.
The Beery Barham.
That was her nickname, the Beery Barham.
Why was it called the Beery Barham?
Well, I could drink a lot of beer, you see, all sailors on board.
So, any memories of being in Liverpool in early 1940, standing by the ship?
Yes. While I was in Liverpool, of course, there was the trouble over in Norway, Narvik, and all our first-class stokers, able seamen, etc., were sent across as a gun crew, or at least, you know, as a naval division. And we had a little three-pounder gun on board, on wheels, and that also went over. And when it arrived, the gunnery officer off the Nelson, I believe it was, said, "I want that," and his particular ship's company took charge of this gun. But the first time I fired it, the bloody thing blew up. So it's a good job I had two blokes to do it. But I was a second-class stoker at the time, you see, so I didn't have to go. All I did then at that particular time was to issue everybody with webbing and gaiters and belts and rifles and God knows what else. And then I also acted as sentry on the gate, and we were issued with orders that everybody coming through the gate, you had to challenge them. You know, we'd got to know the workmen sort of thing. But during fire rounds of a night time, they found something ticking in a case down below. So it was taken up top and put in a bucket of water, thinking it was a bomb of some sort. So as a result, everybody coming into the dock, Gladstone Dock it was, by the way, we had to challenge them, you see. So it was a question of halt, or if they didn't, you know, stop, halt or I'll fire. Three times you warn them, and if they didn't halt, then the third time you let one off. And I only had to do it once. It was an Irishman, and he come running back, scared stiff that I was going to shoot him. And during two or three air raids on Liverpool, I was sent up to the overhead railway with a rifle, just in case any paratroopers would land here or anything.
So what was the ticking? What did it turn out to be?
Was one of the dockies had brought, he said I was down in a space, he said, and I couldn't, I didn't know the time, there was no clock down there, so I brought my alarm clock, so I knew when it was lunchtime or time to knock off. And he played merry hell there about his clock being in a bucket of water. But it showed that our security was pretty good as a result.
And you said this gun blew up. When did you fire the gun?
Well, it was over in Narvik. I wasn't there. I mean, it's just the story that I've told you that, you know, been relayed back to me.
So you were standing by the Barham in Liverpool for a long time?
Until the May, and then that was from February till May while the repairs were being carried out. And then we left in May to go up to Scapa. And up there we did tilt tests, and all the guns were tested and so on, and we did a little bit of convoy work. We didn't go through to Russia or anything like that. And then back into Scapa, and eventually left Scapa to go to Gibraltar. And then whilst we were in Gibraltar, I was in a fan flat, doing my usual job. This is over the weekend, look. And I had just enough paint left in me paint pot to mark main fan and auxiliary fan on the little template on the fans. And some dirty so-and-so had used my paint pot as a toilet. So I went and saw the chief stoker and complained. So he said, "Well, I can't do anything about it." He said, "Go up and tip it over the side and have a cigarette." Well, when I did, it was just before colours, and I tipped this over the side, and it was all gone black that was in there, sort of thing. So with that, there was an explosion, which was the ship was attacked by one-man torpedoes, and the torpedo that exploded alongside the Baron, we eventually did manage to get an Italian prisoner. Then a plane was flown over to La Linea, and on the beach was another one of these one-man torpedoes, like a torpedo with a bicycle on it, which they pedalled and set up a sight and then pulled a lever once they'd got, you know, in the sight, and let the torpedo go. Well, of course, it hit our net, so it didn't penetrate, and we had fish for several days.
So, somebody urinated in your pen?
They shit in it, to be quite honest. So I can say possibly my life was saved by a bloody turd sort of thing, where they tipped it over the side, like. But it always reminds me of that, you see, in Gibraltar.
Did you see the Italians who attacked?
No, I didn't see them, not the actual prisoners. They eventually were sent to somewhere or the other, to Malta, I believe, I'm not sure. Anyway, we left Gibraltar and carried on to Alexandria. And whilst we were at Alexandria, Dakar, the bombardment of Dakar took place. And while we were there, the Resolution was torpedoed by a Vichy French submarine, and Barham took her in tow. The next thing was that the Richelieu was in Dakar Harbour, and we didn't know at the time, but General de Gaulle, who was there with a troop ship, he said, "I'm not going to have French blood spilt," he said. So, you know, we'll call the landings off. But we didn't know that Richelieu was out of ammunition. She couldn't have done much more damage. Well, the Baron was hit by a couple of shells. In fact, one went right through the chippy shop, which was on the upper deck. It went in through like a porthole and out the other side. And one shell had landed on the upper deck, and a couple of matlows just chucked it over the side. So we were lucky that it didn't explode.
What were you aware of when the ship was hit during the Dakar raid?
Well, I was down on watch, so I didn't know a lot about it, except that, you know, you heard quite a bang, and that was about it. But it was afterwards, you came up, you could just see what damage was done, but and the stories from the other people, what they'd experienced. But being you're down below in the boiler rooms, you see, or the engine room, wherever you were working at the time, you didn't see. I mean, it used to be, when the 15-inch guns were fired, the acrid smoke would come down, which the fans would draw down, and, the boiler room would be full of this blinking stink and smoke or what have you, and your boilers, you'd get flashes, back flashes from the sprayers up. And when we were in action, we never really saw anything. We only heard the sounds, like, you know. And we heard the commander on the tannoy system. What was it? Was yelling out. No, this was at Crete. Now, you could hear what was going on over the tannoy, but that's about all. But eventually, as I say, we had to take the Resolution. She'd slewed